Hello and welcome to episode 62 of the Tech Reformation, where the world of technology meets the worldview of Christianity. I'm Derek.
I'm Craig.
And this is Tink.
And we are out of alphabetical order this week.
Yes, we are.
Indeed. Because Ben's not here. Oh, well.
I heard a very interesting statistic this week from my wife, who is talking to our youth pastor at church. He says that only like 10% of the kids in youth group have a Facebook.
Really?
Yeah, this was a little bit mind-blowing. Like, I figured like everyone had a Facebook, but probably the younger people did not really use it that much. But apparently, it is not cultural norm to have a Facebook anymore and be a young person.
What? I would have thought that was the biggest demographic.
Well, Facebook is for old people now, Craig.
Oh, okay, sorry. Didn't get that memo. Is it because of Snapchat?
I would assume a lot of people use Snapchat now instead.
I mean, I love Snapchat.
You don't love Snapchat. Don't lie to us, Craig.
I'm trying. No, I don't.
But I just figured I'd share that because I haven't heard that before, and that flipped another switch in my mind. In thinking about you know, what young people do these days, and cementing further that I am getting older. Whee!
We're all getting older, even the young people.
Yep. There was a little bit of follow-up that I got, like, it looks like exactly 3 weeks ago on Twitter from Zach. Not 3 weeks ago. Somewhere around there. So Zach Burnham tweeted me on Twitter talking about the Surface Dial when we were talking about it. And he was questioning why it's an actual physical thing and not digital, and wondered if we had any thoughts on it. Did you guys have any thoughts on it? I have some thoughts on it.
Let's hear your thoughts first, then, if you have thoughts.
Well, he says it seems like I'm missing something. It seems like it could be a three-finger tap to bring it up on the screen or something like that. As a designer or like a creative in general, isn't it just nice to have a physical dial? That would be my first thing. Also, clearly, do you guys remember the original Microsoft Surface like 10 years back or whenever that was?
Probably six years ago.
And how it would recognize, like, you'd put like water glasses on the table and it would say, oh, water glass. And like, it does this fun animation and whatnot. Like, it would interact with normal physical devices, that sort of thing. It just seems like Microsoft really wanted to get this tech in there somewhere along the line, and it's part of that. I don't know. I think it's cool. That's all my thoughts on it, Zach. I don't know if that helps.
Yeah, I don't have anything to add. Sorry.
You all are useless. Let's move
on.
That brings us into Tech You Should Know, where we bring a few topics from the past week that we want to talk about, and then we talk about them. A few weeks ago, Snap Incorporated, the geniuses behind Snapchat, released a new product called Spectacles, a set of $130 camera-enabled sunglasses that let you take snaps and send them to your smartphone. Now you can buy a pair, but in a very peculiar way, and one that is completely and utterly Snap-esque. You can only buy a pair from adorable bright yellow vending machines called Snapbots. These vending machines will be traveling around the country, staying one day at any given location, and traceable via a map on the Spectacles website. The buying experience is also very Snapchat. The Snapbot uses a built-in camera to let you virtually try on various colors of spectacles using their augmented reality tech that's used in Snapchat.
That's pretty cool. I think Snapchat have done something good here.
You were giving me thumbs down throughout the entire reading of
No, that. Because you were sort of raving on the geniuses behind Snapchat, and I wasn't too sure about how much we should be pumping them up at the start of the article, but I don't know. Seems like a really restricted version of Google Glass, or whatever, Google Glasses. Like, it just takes pictures and does the Snapchat thing, but with glasses. And I like the idea of vending machines that only stay for one day. That's kind of cool. It's kind of a cool marketing strategy for a new product.
Yeah, I think this will only last like a month or two. But it's pretty cool. It's unclear to me in the article that I read whether the SnapBots actually moved themselves. I'm guessing that's not the case. I'm guessing someone else moves them. But it was worded in such a way that it was a little weird.
What would be even cooler is if they just disappeared, like if they teleported them.
Technology from the future.
You put your money in, the vending machine disappears.
It's a real Snapchat experience. It just disappears.
Microsoft has announced it's launching its primary coding interface, Visual Studio, on Mac computers. This is a big move, but not unexpected for Microsoft. They've historically locked developers onto their platform by keeping the product only on Windows, but as they transition to a cloud-first mentality, this makes sense. Letting professionals easily develop from any platform they wish means that they're more likely to keep developing for Windows products.
I was just going to say, this will help someone I know who uses Visual Studio to code iPhone applications. So, interesting that they figure it'll help people continue to develop Microsoft products.
So, Tank, as a Windows developer, as a developer who uses Windows, my uneducated assumption would be that you would use Visual Studio. Is this at all correct?
You're correct. Whenever, not so much anymore, because they have a free edition, but whenever I programmed all the time, yes, that was my main IDE, my main environment.
Yeah. So Craig said someone he knows uses it to code for iPhone apps.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to understand the world of the developer. What all can you do in something like Visual Studio? Is this just like a general coding application, or is this specifically like, is this a Windows version of Xcode, which would be Apple's, way of developing for the Mac and iPhone exclusively? Clearly it's not quite that, but.
Yeah. So it's a coding environment. So like if you wanted to, you could pull up Notepad and start to code, but that'd be a very miserable experience.
Right, exactly.
And so Visual Studio has been out for a really long time, and it's increased new and new features. If you're doing C#, you would start a C# project, write your code with it, and it helps you out a ton the whole time, like gives you code, tells you when you've written errors. And then you can right-click something and say build, or press a cut key, and it'll compile it all. And then you can hit run, and your program will pop up. And this is all within one program. And so now they've increased features over time. And so you can program in pretty much any language that it supports, which is pretty much any. So,
cool.
And it'll do the same things. It'll help you manage your project. It'll build it if it needs compiled. It'll run all sorts of little macros, has tons of helpful shortcut keys. So it's just an all-in-one purpose tool that's over time turned into a huge mammoth that many people don't know all the ins and outs of.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you for that little lesson on Windows.
So the real question is, Tank, would you, knowing what you know about Apple products and the stability and whatever, would you switch to a Mac for something different and continue using Visual Studio, or would you just stay with Windows because it's what you know?
I'm sticking with Windows. I'm pretty big into video games still.
Yes,
I don't want to lose Steam, or at least 90% of Steam. And then, I guess Macs can last for 20 years if you want them to, but Windows cheaper. So I can't see myself spending $2,000 on a computer.
There you go.
Okay.
Yep. So that's my
choice. It adds spice to the podcast.
Exactly. I wouldn't want to make us an all Apple person.
Podcast. Yeah.
Chinese scientists are officially doing human testing with CRISPR, a gene editing tool that may have many applications in the field of medicine. The application that the Chinese are testing against is a specific form of lung cancer in hopes that it may work with other cancer patients that have had no luck with chemo, radiation, or other treatments. American scientists had proposed a similar study earlier this year, but there's more red tape and regulation in the U.S. to work through, so China has beat America to the punch on this particular first.
I have no opinion on this topic.
Yeah, that's more like, we've talked about this before, I feel like you all should know about this. There's really nothing morally controversial here.
I'm kidding, I probably do have an opinion on it, but it was well covered in the CRISPR episode, and whatever.
Yeah.
And then the rugged marriage episode that followed our CRISPR episode, and then the extended, you know,
conversation. And all of that, yep.
So I am, just to clarify, I am pro-vaccine, but I'm not necessarily pro-CRISPR.
All right. Twitter has finally rolled out a feature that helps protect its users from abuse. Twitter is expanding its mute feature to the notifications tab, letting users mute words, phrases, usernames, emoji, or hashtags. Once added, the user will not see any notifications pop up that contain the muted content. This is a win. I feel like this is a win.
It's a good idea. Yeah.
Seems very obvious, and they should have definitely done that beforehand, but, you know, good that they did it now.
I like the emoji muting. You can mute all the happy emojis and just have a depressing newsfeed.
Have a very sad Twitter.
Yep. Or the opposite, but...
There'd be a lot of emos who were into that. Can we do the same thing on Facebook? Because Derek was like, they should have done this a long time ago. And I'm like, well, has Facebook done it? Because Twitter really is, I guess, mainly trying to keep up with Facebook. Like, they're competing against each other, even though Twitter is a totally different style of media and... less users.
Well, the difference between Twitter and Facebook is that Twitter, you can be anonymous. Facebook is really pushed to make sure its user base, like anyone that has...
identifiable. Yeah.
Yeah. Like Calvinist Batman got kicked off his like profile and now he has to be a page, like that sort of thing. I had a friend who had a stuffed bear that she set up a profile for, and then she got... she got kicked off, or that profile got kicked off because, you know, it's a stuffed bear. It's not really a person. So Twitter has the misfortune of having a lot of anonymous users, of having people or bots be able to harass someone by just creating new accounts and, you know, harassing
them. They can hide behind their anonymity kind of thing.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
I guess what I'm saying though is like because Facebook is more of a personal medium. Like it's more, like you said, it's supposed to be able to clearly identify who the user is. Mm-hmm. It seems like there should be a pretty high level of customization. I know you can change a whole bunch of settings for notifications already.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the kind of thing that I think I would find it useful on Twitter. Oh, on Facebook, to be able to not get notified about things that my friends post if they contain certain words. And I don't know that you can do that yet on Facebook. But.
No, you can't. You can't. That'd be nice. I would love to stop hearing about vaccine truthers and all that. But, you know, we don't always...
Hang on, are you anti-vaccines?
No. No, I mean, like... No, the people who are anti-vaccine.
Oh, I see.
I would just like to not... be tempted into entering those discussions.
I've never heard them called truthers before. Yeah, okay, cool.
It seems like an adequate term. And as a bonus story this week that I had to add in because it just made me laugh, Coca-Cola has created a selfie camera boot thing that attaches to the bottom of a Coke bottle. And when the bottle tips to 70 degrees as you take a sip of your delicious sugary liquid, it snaps a picture of you. Nice. I have no idea if you can even buy this thing, but if you really want to know where to get this marvel of technology, you can find it yourself, because I can't be bothered.
Those can't be good pictures.
They look pretty good.
Really? It must be a super wide-angle lens, because it would be quite a close angle, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll have to find the link and post it for you guys. Well, anyway, I'll show it to you later, but it's quite amusing. And that's all the tech you should know this week. If there's anything that you think we should have mentioned, please feel free to email us at ask@techreformation.com.
right, guys, guess what?
What?
There's something that throttles my data, and I need to talk about it.
What throttles your data, Craig?
It's
your data. What throttles data. Your data?
Yeah. Thanks. I just don't know. Maybe I should just call it data because everyone, you know, the vast majority of listeners call it that. Anyway, but then I'm succumbing to... Anyway, I ranted a little while ago, a few weeks ago, about the new music app for iPhone. And Ben quickly sorted out the issue I had, which was just the fact that I was seeing downloaded music as like an option down the bottom, but I wasn't realizing that it was actually cutting out all the music that I didn't want to be hearing. And so that was helpful. But more recently, I've noticed another thing where I'm pretty sure this was by default. Yeah, I definitely haven't turned it on. So by default, it's set to shuffle songs. So even within an album, if you go into a specific artist and a specific album and hit the first song and expect it to then play through the album, it won't do that. It will just jump to whatever song it wants next after that song that you've tapped. And this was bugging me because I got a new album. It's actually a double album from a guy that I know who is a really good singer-songwriter. And he sent it to me in the mail. I put it in my computer, listened to it on the way to work, and the songs were out of order. And when I listen to an album for the first time, I want to know how... It's kind of like reading the Bible in terms of context. Like, I want to know how the artist wanted it to be presented and the flow and whatever of the songs.
Maybe yeah, that's totally a bit behind you there. No, I'm
maybe
totally
that's a bit music nerdy, but I'm glad you can identify with that. Tank, do you know what I'm talking about there?
Nope.
Okay. Yep. Anyway, so moving right along.
Okay.
I've owned like 5 CDs in my life, so.
Okay. So anyway, there was no, if you're just playing the song, there's no obvious shuffle button apart from the one at the very top of the list that says shuffle all, and I definitely hadn't hit that. If you then tap the song at the bottom of the screen, which is like the now playing area, it brings up an almost full screen window that shows you the album artwork, the scrub bar of where you're up to in the song, the name of the song, the album it's on, the play controls, and the volume. And then there's a thing of whether you want to play it through your Apple TV or whether you want to delete it from your library or love it or dislike it, which is all very nice and social and whatever, lots of buttons.
Yeah,
but there's no shuffle button. So I couldn't turn shuffle off. And I was like, what the heck is going on? This is the second time where I know there has to be a way to turn it off. And I just can't find it in the design. So I went into settings, went into the music app. There's nothing in there about turning permanent shuffle off. So I Googled it and I found that when you're on that screen where it shows you the play bar and the album artwork for the individual song that you're playing, you then have to scroll upwards. And that shows you an up next playlist, and at the top of your up next playlist, there's a shuffle button that you can turn off. But by default, that screen is hidden, and there's nothing to tell you down the bottom of the screen there that you can scroll further down. You just have to think, maybe it's below this full screen window that I'm seeing, and scroll upwards. So, again, yes, it works. Yes, you can turn it off. But I think Apple really need to think about why they're making these weird design decisions where they're kind of hiding things and expecting people to just stumble across them, because that was not intuitive for me. So I've kind of sorted it, but my data is still throttled just in the fact that they have designed an app that is not how you would expect something so simple to work.
And I would deem that you are entirely justified to be throttled in that sense. Apple's actually fixing it in an upcoming release of iOS. You want to know how?
How?
They are putting, when you enter the now playing screen, you know how when you installed iOS 10 at first, how like when you swipe up what's it called? Mission Control?
Yeah.
When you swipe up into Mission Control, like it'll say, hey, now it has 2 tabs. You can swipe between them.
Yes.
Okay. It's doing the same thing for the now playing screen. They're not changing the button position. They're just telling people the first time that they get into that area, oh, hey, you just need to swipe up.
See, I even looked in Mission Control for a shuffle button, thinking that maybe it's been added in there or something weird, but it's not in there.
Which would be a perfect way to play it. That would be a perfect place to put it.
No, a perfect place to put it would be on the main window where you're playing the song from.
Yes, definitely.
The funny thing is, on that song window, in the middle at the very bottom, there's the Apple TV stream, like which device do you want to play the song from? icon. On the right-hand side, there's three dots, which is like a menu to go and delete or add to a playlist or something, like I said. And on the left, it's blank. So there's even a space there for it. And they've just gone, we could use that for shuffle. No, I know. We'll hide it underneath in a separate slide. Anyway.
That was probably the conversation.
It probably went exactly like that, but in American accents with Johnny Ives' British accent thrown in every now and then. So anyway, I just think they need to get their crap together. And it sounds like they're sort of going to try and do that a little bit, but maybe not. So that has been throttling my data recently. Our sponsor this week is Mission Aware, the place to go for all your Reformed swag. Whether you're looking for t-shirts, hoodies, moleskin journals, pint glasses, or coffee mugs, they have it all and more. I recently ordered a coffee mug which commemorates the 500th anniversary of the Reformation, and let me tell you, this thing looks great. It's got an awesome sort of line-drawn logo with a big 500 and hammer and nails, paying homage to Martin Luther nailing the 95 Theses to the door of Wittenberg. It looks really cool. Can't wait to use it. Their products are super high quality, and let's face it, who doesn't want a t-shirt with their favorite Reformed theologian's face on it? I know I do. So head to missionaware.com and check out their fantastic range of products. And at checkout, don't forget to tick the box saying you heard about them on the Tech Reformation podcast.
Hi, this is Cody, the host of the Ordinary Pastor podcast. I'd like to invite you to tune into this podcast weekly as we discuss ministry from an ordinary perspective, whether that's the perspective of the pastor, the pastor's wife, missionaries, or lay people. We discuss all kinds of different topics on this show. You can find us on iTunes, Podbean, or find us through the Theology Mix Network. I hope you listen, hope you tune in, and may God bless you.
And now it's time for Theology from the Headlines. Our main topic this week has to do with the whole fake news controversy that is happening right now. Have either of you been in any circles that you have seen this yet, since you are in completely different countries than America?
Yes, I'm in a Slack channel that promoted it through our admin TFTH discussion.
That's where I heard about it.
Oh. Okay, so you guys have no idea what I'm talking about. Well, let's do some recap. So there was an election this past couple of week or so.
Really? Yeah. Like a local, like a state election in Philadelphia?
There was a state election. There was a national election too.
Hang on, are you in Philadelphia or Pennsylvania? Philadelphia is in Pennsylvania, right?
Yep, that's right.
Okay, so
you saved yourself. Good job.
Glad I've got my American geography slightly down.
So the election happened, and leading up to the election, there was apparently a glut of seriously fake news articles being circulated through Facebook. I'll just take some quotes here from the BuzzFeed article itself. BuzzFeed did some investigative journalism on this. In the final 3 months of the U.S. presidential campaign, the top performing fake election news stories on Facebook generated more engagement than the top stories from major news outlets such as the New York Times, Washington Post, Huffington Post, NBC News, and others. BuzzFeed news analyst has an analysis has found. During these critical months of the campaign, 20 top-performing false election stories from hoax sites and hyperpartisan blogs generated 8,711,000 shares, reactions, and comments on Facebook.
That's a lot.
Yeah, but within the same time period, the 20 best-performing election stories from 19 major news websites generated a total of 7,367,000 shares, which is like a million and a half less shares, reactions, and comments on Facebook. Up until those last 3 months of the campaign, the top election content from major news outlets had easily outpaced had easily outpaced that of fake election news on Facebook. Then as the election grew closer, engagement for fake content on Facebook skyrocketed and surpassed that of the content from major news outlets. People are troubled that Facebook is doing so little to combat fake news. And this has been, on a lot of podcasts this week that I've listened to and all throughout the headlines and stuff like that. So the interesting question is that now Facebook has to, and when we're talking fake news, like, I'm talking like the obviously fake news. I think that's what people are talking about. Like, obviously fake. Like, these are clearly things people just made up. There are a lot of these websites that look official, but they are not. Like, they have the you've been on fake news sites that, like, they look like they're news sites, or they make themselves look like they're news sites, but the stories are clearly not. And when you, like, and then you just have to, it's like, hey, the thing you posted to Facebook is not right.
In that voice, so anyway, always in that voice.
There was a lot of this going on, and mostly on the conservative side of the spectrum. Let's see, some of the top false election stories were like Pope Francis endorsing Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton selling weapons to ISIS, Hillary Clinton being disqualified from holding federal office, and FBI director receiving millions from the Clinton Foundation. So seeing as Facebook has grown to such a massive user base, over a billion people, they have now successfully become not just a social network, but a media outlet. A feed for people to gain their news, much like Twitter is, except what Facebook does is they curate your content. You know, you don't see everything that everyone you're subscribed to posts, or it will show you things that your friends like, or that, you know, things that it thinks you will like, and that sort of thing. And so Facebook ends up curating all of this content with whatever computer algorithms they have. And they have now become a media company.
Can I interject with a comment?
Yes.
I don't know exactly what... I mean, it seems like the response in this article is, why didn't Facebook do more? Like, that's the question, right?
Yeah, basically.
So, why didn't Facebook act to squash fake news so that real news could cut through? And you just... I think you were sort of about to mention freedom of speech and sort of go down that road, I'm guessing. And I guess I can see that argument, and I can see how it'd be frustrating, particularly for Hillary supporters who feel like they've been ripped off because, you know, all the gullible general populace have been swayed by the fake news, possibly. But I think the whole freedom of there's two things I think about the freedom of speech issue in this area. I think one of the reasons we all love the internet is because it does give a platform for the little guy to have their say and for people to publish content however that, you know, whenever and wherever they want. And to therefore, I guess they can say what they want generally, as long as it's not super dodgy and gets taken down for being offensive or whatever. And so I think that's a pretty well-known fact, and that's a lot of people like that freedom on the internet. When we're talking journalism, if people are making what is a demonstrably a false claim, particularly about another individual, then I guess the person who's being claimed against can, you know, is having that claim made against them is within their rights to force a retraction or, you know, to have that clarified and made right somehow, because journalists, if they claim something's incorrect, I think there is like an ethical thing that they have to, they or at least that's my understanding. Someone, one of our listeners who's a journalist might be able to correct us if I'm wrong there. But yeah, I kind of think the onus, like my opinion on this would be that the onus really is on the individual to educate themselves a bit about like what's real news and what's not. And I've just gone to the Political Insider's website, which is one of the three major ones that they were talking about. I think they had a couple of articles in there. And I've gone straight to the contact page to see who's behind this or where they're based. It says they're based in Reston, VA. I don't know what's VA.
Virginia.
Okay, yep. So they say they're based in Virginia, but there's not even a contact form. There's like an error message appearing on my screen, which is like a short code from WordPress for a contact form. But I guess the next step would be to do like a Whois lookup on the domain and see who owns the domain and see if it's even based in the US or whatever, all that kind of thing. But I guess even without going to that extent, yeah, so it says that it's registered to someone in Scottsdale, Arizona, and then they're claiming to be in Virginia, which is weird in itself. But anyway, I think even without going to that extent, there's been plenty of times when I've seen a headline on Facebook and gone, that seems, you know, I wouldn't have expected that to be the case. And then I've seen where it's coming from and I've gone, okay, it's not one of the major news providers, so it's probably not worth reading. And may not even be true. And so that hasn't taken a lot of research. That's just a bit of common sense. And so if people aren't doing that, I don't know that that's Facebook's fault. I think Facebook's providing a platform, and then it's up to the individual to use common sense.
Yeah. Well, but then you get into the argument that that if Facebook is not monitoring their platform, you know, that if Facebook is not being responsible for the change that it's that it is inadvertently making in the world, well, there are a lot of, you know, what used to happen was that there would be newspapers that would be held up to journalistic integrity by their peers, and people would only read the newspaper in their local area, and if that started, you know, publishing lies, that would probably get around pretty quick, and the newspaper would be discredited. Nowadays, it's way easier to pop up a newspaper and quote-unquote newspaper. This is, you know, talking about a website. You just build a website in a day and post a few stories that will get people angry or upset or take their rage out on the people that you want them to be taking rage out on, or you just want to screw with society or whatever. But anyway, it's easy to create a newspaper now. And it's easy to shut them down, bring up another one, shut them down, bring up another one. And so I don't know if people are necessarily more gullible now. I think there needs to be held accountability for the articles that are being posted. And considering that Facebook now has the power that it has to shape the world we live in because so many people exist on Facebook, they need to be exhibiting some kind of accountability. But it is the struggle.
Do you know, though,
between...
because you said in the past, I guess this is where I find it a little bit of a different. We're talking about different categories in terms of journalism, like newspapers and Facebook. Facebook would say they're just providing a platform, and what people do on that platform is up to the individual. It's up to the user. What you said before was in the past, newspapers have done what they do and have been held to certain standards by their peers. Mm-hmm. Facebook isn't claiming to be a newspaper.
No.
It's not claiming to be an authority on what's true news. So why should it then have to curate the news for us to make sure that we're getting true news and not untrue news?
Well, it's the one delivering the newspapers to us. That's what I'm trying to say. Like, it is enabling the delivery of all of these crappy newspapers.
Okay, so if there was no Facebook and these, and I'm just trying to extrapolate this out of it.
It's kind of a weird analogy, sorry.
To say if Facebook wasn't the medium that we were talking about, if people had found these news items just through a Google search, would it be Google's responsibility to filter out fake news, or would it be the guy who, I can't remember his last name, but Tim, the guy who started the internet back in 1995 or whatever. do you know what I mean?
Like,
would it be the W3C's responsibility for Facebook can insert bias. Let's be honest about that. And I think that's a problem. So that whole shutting down of Christian free speech in favor of liberal free speech, I think, is certainly an issue, and that's something that's worth talking about, because that becomes an inequality thing. But when they're saying we're going to equally allow people to publish true news and, you know, hoax news, basically, I don't know that that's technically them doing anything malicious. I think it's just saying it's a free platform.
Yeah. Well, Google would say that, yes, we do have more to do. Sundar Pichai, sorry, it's a weird name to say. He has made comments on the post-election fake news controversy and has admitted his company has made some mistakes too. And they've hence banned fake news from their ad platform, like fake news outlets from their ad platform. And they're fighting against that. And Facebook has actually done that too, but that's just the ads. That's not, you know, just serving up the queries, so to speak. Mm.
I think it would be great if Facebook did do something about the problem, I guess, is what I'm like. If I'm honest, that's probably, which I want to be honest.
Yeah, right.
But I guess the more I think about it, I think it would be good if we could trust what we see.
Yeah.
But I also, yeah, I just know there's a limit to what they can be held responsible for. And really, I think the actual problem is deeper in that there are people out there spreading false information on the internet in general, and that they're the source of the issue. Whether or not Facebook could help to filter that out and should be helping to filter that out, I guess, is a fair question to ask.
Yeah,
I agree with Craig. I think because if Facebook were the one who was giving us the news without any outside source, so like if Facebook said, here, you should read this news article, and it just posted it out of nowhere, so ads are an example, then I would say it's responsible for that. But if it has an algorithm that says, I'm only showing you what your friends post, and this is probably something that you're interested in and will click on, and that ends up being fake news, then yeah, that's not Facebook's fault. The news got there because you're friends with someone who posted it, and then you're also interested in those topics. But I could see a solution being something like a tagline that says, this is probably fake news. Based off of many other people saying this link or this website has a lot of fake news. Mm-hmm. So instead of trying to say, I won't show you this, I won't show you what your friend posted unless you go to his newsfeed unprompted.
Right.
Then it'll just say like, hey, lots of people say this is fake news and give you a warning.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think because it would be like the delivery guy. I think you said he's the one that enables you to see the newspaper. It's like the delivery guy reading the newspaper and being like, oh, this story's bad, and scribbling it out before I hand it to you.
Yeah, that's true. And
so I don't think it's Paperboy's job. He's too busy protecting children from running on the road and by throwing the newspaper.
And protecting himself from dogs.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, that's an interesting way of looking at that, is putting the... putting the warning. I think that would be an excellent method of this, because it would absolve Facebook of responsibility and still like warn people that, hey, just so you know. So yeah, okay, well, we solved the internet. That's good.
And maybe even whenever you're about to post that link, if Facebook already knows, like, hey, you're about to post fake news, you might want to read this a little more before you make a fool of yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
I do think there's a lot to be said, though, for, using wisdom that God's given us, or using the brains that God's given us to do some research. Like, I think part of the problem is we just consume content at such a massive rate that we don't take time to find out what's true and what's not. And as Christians, we know that the Bible is true, and yet we still investigate the Bible. Do you know what I mean? Like, we still go digging and find the context and look at what else was happening in the time period and what the author intended, and read other accounts and see how the other accounts portray certain events and things like that. Like, not so that we're not trying to falsify the Bible in doing that, but we spend time looking at it and working out what is this actually saying and what does that mean, and looking at the truth behind it. And of course, we believe the Bible is true. When we're dealing with this issue, obviously, we shouldn't necessarily all spend our whole lives studying all the news that we've come across. I think God's given us the ability to use things like wisdom and discernment to determine what is true. And what isn't. And we might not always get that 100% right, but I think we can at least steward that ability as best we can and try to focus our attention on not just, as the popcorn theology people would say, not just being mindless consumers, but actually looking a little bit further in and trying to work out where is this coming from and where is the truth in this.
Yeah. And I would say there's a problem with Christians tending to they hold their convictions too easily. Like they acquire convictions far too easily for what is healthy.
Yeah, that's true.
There's
or at least once they acquire them, they don't I think there's a lot to be said for challenging, allowing your convictions to be challenged, even if that is for the purpose of them being strengthened.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it's healthy to do that, and a lot of Christians just refuse to do that.
Exactly. And so it perpetuates the fake news cycle. It disagrees with my convictions, and so I will perpetuate it because this seems like the best way to hold on to my identity. Don't use your political convictions to create your identity. Put your identity in Christ. Put your identity in the Bible. And examine those fake news stories. And we're into the section where we would normally talk about recos, but Tank and I just talked, and we don't have any recos, so go find something you enjoy.
In the world.
Nothing at all. You've heard it here. And Craig just left, so you know he doesn't have anything for us either. So anyway, we'll just go right on to, if you want to contact us, you can connect with us in Slack. Our Slack channel is open 24/7. 31 days a month, unless the month does not have 31 days, in which case it's only, you know, 30 or 29. And that you can you can join that at slack.techreformation.com.
And you can visit our website, techreformation.com, and see all of our past shows. You can sort by topic or tag. And there's also a link to the Slack page in case you forget and don't want to rewind.
Exactly. We're a part of the Theology Mix Network. The link to the website and the iTunes main master feed is in the show notes.
And you can review us on iTunes or recommend us on Overcast. We'd really appreciate it just to help your friends and other people know about us.
Music used by special permission of Matthew Parker. Check him out on SoundCloud and iTunes. This has been Tech Reformation. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.